Welcome to Hockey Night in New York, where Islanders hockey always reigns supreme. Whether you were raised at the barn in Uniondale or born in the stable at Belmont, Hockey Night in New York is your home for all things Isles. Now, let's drop the puck and get this party started.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is Hockey Night in New York. Welcome to the program, everyone. It is Sunday, April 14th, 2024, coming at you live from Blue Line Deli and Bagels right here in Huntington. Big day here today. Helped Donnie Rosner raise some money for a great cause, the Chloe Bell Foundation. Had a great time doing that earlier with Donnie. He did a fantastic job. Raised $4,000 for the Chloe Bell Foundation. Did an excellent, excellent job. And we're here now to talk some New York Islanders at Hockey Night in New York. Big show coming up for you. Ken Danico, New Jersey Devils legend, coming on to talk about the Islanders Devils tilt coming up tomorrow. And of course, the big Eastern Conference playoff race. Can't wait to talk to Ken. With me, as always, is Mr. Stefan Rosner. And we got Edzo and we got Jake the Snake over here in the Snake Den. Join us for a big show. Stefan, how you doing, pal?
Doing great. Just came from North Hall practice rink. The Islanders practiced today, which wasn't a shock after their play, but now huge game coming up against the Devils. Huge.
Winning in. Yep. That's it. Get 2 points, and not only are you in, but you get the third place in the Metro, and then you wait to find out if you're facing the Rangers or the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yeah, obviously the Islanders and Rangers in the playoffs hasn't happened since last time the Rangers won a cup. Islanders played the Hurricanes last year, so it'll be interesting either way, but I think Islander fans and Ranger fans are both praying that it's an Islander-Ranger first-round matchup.
That would be nice. That's what I'm pulling for, but before we dive into all that, I'm going to tell you all about our wonderful, wonderful sponsor, starting with right here at Blue Line Deli and Bagel. Satisfy your hunger at 719 West Jericho Turnpike in Huntington and 217 Carlton Avenue in East Islip. Check out the menu at BlueLineDeli.com. Also proud to be sponsored by Main Street Board Game Cafe. Find your crowd and unplug your game at 307 Main Street in Huntington Village, and also proud to be sponsored by Razor and Kniff Attorneys at Law, ready to fight for you. Check them out at RazorandKniff.com. That's RaiserKnniff.com for a free consultation. And now, with the pleasantries out of the way, Stefan, let's talk a little Islanders here. We had an injury scare with Noah Dobson. Maybe if you have an update on that, what do you got?
Yeah, so he left the game early against Montreal. Doesn't play against the Rangers. He's day-to-day with an upper body injury. That's all we're getting as of right now. He's not. Okay. Doesn't look like he's going to play against the Devils. Wasn't at practice today. Riley filled in on the power play in the top unit. They moved Aho to the second with Pulak. So, yeah, right now they're without Dobson, which is a vital loss, but every team's go through injuries at a certain point in the years, and it's up to the Islanders now to find a way.
I think the good news is that it's just day-to-day. We just got to find out how many days that's going to be. But I think there was a little bit of a scare that it could have been a little longer term. So hopefully he's back. Obviously, we know how vital he is to the team, what a season that he's had. And hopefully he's there, he's back soon to help them either get into the playoffs or when the playoffs start.
Yeah, I mean, we saw last year when the Islanders lost Romanov at the end of the regular season. You just have to find a way. Maybe it, obviously they got Romanov back for the playoffs. He wasn't at his best. But yeah, this is about to show really what this team's made of. Losing your most prolific offensive defense when you're a guy that's quarterbacking a struggling power play unit. But we saw against the Rangers that even with that power play struggling, losing Dobson, it looks a lot worse. It was a lot harder for them to settle in. So we'll see what happens. Aho is going to play. Bortuzzo is going to play. And this is why you added depth. You look at the moves Lou made. And sure, it wasn't to replace Dobson, but you had Pellick go down, Aho go down, Mayfield go down, Pulak go down. So it's Dobson's turn to go down now.
And this is
the sign of a good team, what you're made of, when you could see guys step up in key roles. And no one's going to replace what Dobson brings, but collectively, we'll see if they could bounce back and find a way there.
Yeah, it tests the depth of your team, and we've seen the Islanders go through this especially a lot with the defense this year, as you just pointed out. And you had guys like Bortuzzo and Riley coming in. Riley, who's looking really good, actually. I think I love what he's done this season. But, you know, we'll see what happens with Dobson. Was there any other news on the lineup front?
So Varlamov will be in goal against the Devils. Yes, Sorokin goes in. Probably is one of his better performances of the year. Definitely as of late. 41 saves. Shootouts are a different story with Sorokin. I think he's got a 600-something save, but it's shootouts. Other thing to keep an eye on is Kyle MacLean left practice early due to sickness.
Okay.
Was expecting him to play, but we've all been sick before, stomach flu.
Sure.
We'll see what happens. I think the Islanders will skate tomorrow morning. If not, we'll talk to Wah before the game starts. That's the other thing, but besides that, Status quo.
So why don't we dive into the game recaps here? We'll talk about what happened this week. Obviously, the Islanders are riding a 7-game point streak now. They went on the 6-game winning streak. They get the overtime loss against the Rangers, but let's dive in to all of that. So let's rewind to Tuesday. The 4-2 win against the Rangers, 3-0 first period. Varlamov outstanding in that game. You get the rare empty net goal from Anders Lee. Everybody's feeling pretty good. Obviously, the Rangers come back on two power play goals. Still kind of a narrative here for the New York Rangers as they struggle to score 5-on-5. They get the two power play goals to make it interesting, but the Islanders hang on. They get the empty netter and a big 2 points against the Rangers.
Yeah, I don't think any Islander fan watched that game and was satisfied with how it ends.
Sure.
Obviously, there's some other things that happened at the end of this game here that we could dive into for a sec, but the positive is that the Islanders got on a very good team early. A team that, sure, maybe their 5-on-5 numbers are middle of the pack. They know how to transition the puck. We saw it at MSG in that embarrassing loss. We saw it at the outdoor game when they finally turned it on. But
right.
That was a thing. They get up to the early lead and you're thinking, just don't do what you did at the outdoor game and you'll be fine. Stay right. out of the box. And what right. happens is, even if they score in the power play now, you're just giving momentum to a team that didn't have any. They came out pretty flat and you allow them to get back in it. And I didn't think they sat back in the third. It was just a situation of once the Rangers got to their game, there was not much the Islanders could do. Now, of course, they had chances to clear and didn't, and that's been a common theme the entire year.
Yes.
But like you said, Varlamov, I mean, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. We have the Pelech running into Zibanejad running into Pelech, leading to some post-game comments. Laviolette ended up walking him back, saying that he was more pissed that they didn't get power play chances, but you just said it. Why is he pissed they didn't get more power play chances? Because they're struggling at 5-on-5 and they need power plays
right.
to win. So we'll see what happens with the Rangers in the playoffs because you're likely going to play more 5-on-5 than you are special teams. But for the Islanders, positive start. Just got to find a way to not get into the penalty trouble. It's easier said than done. With a weak penalty kill, we've talked about it a lot, but just stop putting them in situations like that. That's the biggest key for them.
Yeah, and just to expand on the Laviolette, Pelech, Zibanejad thing, because we got to talk about it.
Yeah.
I mean, we all saw it. We all have eyes. Obviously, this was an incidental thing, and I think it was just a little gamesmanship on the part of Peter Laviolette, just trying to kind of rile his players up and maybe change the narrative for the referees too, being like, hey, you know, you guys missed one there. You owe us, that sort of thing, you know?
And I understood the Dobson one. That I mean, that's a boarding penalty.
Yes.
Nothing besides, like, it's just boarding. And sure, could the Rangers have tied it up with 15 seconds left with the empty net and the 6-on-4?
They absolutely 1,000%.
Yeah. We've seen it. I didn't love him going after. We talked to Pelech the next day. A guy who's had head injuries in back-to-back years. He said he felt sick. Seeing Zibanejad on the ice. This is a guy that would never, first off, has never done that. And it's, again, you watch it.
Yeah.
Clearly runs into him. The Dobson one, Dobson, I'm just playing hard there. It is what it is. And he doesn't care what other coaches are going
to
say.
Yeah, and that happens to every team all the time where you have these borderline plays along the boards and you wonder if it was a boarding penalty or a hit from behind. And sometimes they get called, sometimes they don't, and nobody understands why. There's just a lot of things in this game of hockey where, you know, when you try to contextualize everything, everybody has a different interpretation, and you just hope that the referees get it right in their minds.
And again, there's so many fans, a lot of fans, we don't want the refs impacting the end of games.
Right.
And they see this, I mean, that's in the playoffs, and they call that in the playoffs. That's a tough thing. When we'll see when playoff hockey comes around, usually the first game or two, you kind of see, okay, this is what's going to be called, this is what's not, which is vital for the players to understand what lines they can cross and what they can't. But in that game, that is a playoff type of game, a hard-fought game till the end. You love to see it. Obviously, the Ranger fans wish that there was penalty called. Fortunately, that's not what happened.
Yeah, and I'm actually a little surprised that Laviolette walked it back. I figured he would just move on without saying a word. So
he walked back the comments about Dobson saying he was just heated, but then he was asked about the Pelech situation, if you watch, and he goes, we're moving on. So he didn't own up to flipping out
Fair
about
enough.
That, but I guess you'll take what you can take at this
All
point.
Right. It is what it is. Either way, a big 2 points for the New York Islanders, and that brings us to the following game against the Montreal Canadiens, where the Islanders dominate play, but it still took overtime. It was a close game. Varlamov was good when he needed to be. I think he only faced about 14 shots, but he stopped the ones that he needed to. He made some big saves in that game, too. Palmieri gets the overtime winner. Another huge 2 points against a team that the Islanders need to beat. And you rewind to the week previous, where you had games against Chicago, Columbus. These are teams that the Islanders struggled against earlier in the season. Certain teams like that, the Sharks, we always bring it up. But these are teams that the Islanders have had an issue with this year, and you just don't know what you're going to get regardless of the opponent. But the Islanders finally look like they're in a mode now where they see the task at hand, they know who they're playing against, they know the time of year that it is, and they're getting the wins.
And you're seeing that desperation. You saw it against the Rangers. You're seeing... You know, guys like Brock Nelson dive, Barzal diving in front of shots.
I mean,
you saw a lot in that Ranger game that carried over. Again, you think the Islanders would be more concerned if they weren't getting the chances in games. They were getting a lot of chances. Montembeau played well. It goes to overtime, and then Kyle Palmieri.
What a shot.
I mean, I talked to Pasio after the game. He goes, he practices this 500 times in practice.
Yeah, I saw the tweet.
He's good at it. And for a guy like Palmieri, he's been unreal this year. He's been the most consistent Islander since Waz walked through the doors. When he's healthy, he's showing that he's a clear 25-goal scorer every year, and that shot. And first off, he's come up clutch a lot. You have the empty net. He had goals in four straight games.
Yep.
After that, he had a couple empty net goals, which is ultra vital to closing games out and not blowing games. If they scored empty net goals early in the year, all those collapses, a lot of those probably don't happen if you score in the empty net. So
right.
Palmieri's been great for this team. He's showing really why they brought him in and signed him to that extension. Again, injuries are going to kill you when you're not available and you can't find your rhythm. But what Palmieri has done since Waz walked in the door has to be studied because it's been fantastic.
Yeah, it's been excellent. So another big win. And again, Varlamov coming up big in a game where he didn't see a lot of shots. And I know there's a lot of talk about goalies where it's hard for them to get into a rhythm if they're not facing a lot of pucks. So he was still able to stay steady, make some big saves. And it makes me think of all the Islander fans going into the past couple of seasons talking about, trade Varlamov, get the money off the cap, put it towards another asset. And, I mean, this is the reason why you don't trade Semyon Varlamov. You have your starting goalie, Ilya Sorokin, who long-term is and should be the guy who carries the most of the weight here, right, and should get you the wins. But he hit a rut, as any goalie can do. You can be a Vezina winner every year, but sometimes you got these goalies that'll hit a rut. Sorokin hit one at a bad time, let's say. And Varlamov's able to step in and get those wins and try to think about who the Islanders might have put in for those games if he was not around. So I think this speaks to the decision that Lou Lamoriello made to keep Varley around was a good one.
Well, that's the mindset, right? If Varley's not here. So there's two options. One, you bring in a backup goalie for cheap, or you call up a guy like Skarik who's really struggled.
Yeah.
But more often than not, what they'd probably do with Sorokin struggling is keep throwing him out there and hopefully that he figures it out. Which is, I don't think,
not,
it's the recipe.
Not a great plan.
No, not at all. And I think the Rangers and Islanders are in the same boat. Shesterkin struggled the entire first half. If they don't have Jonathan Quick playing the way Jonathan Quick played, they're in trouble. The same thing with Varlamov is, it's not only that you have a backup goalie that could help you win games. You have a backup goalie that could steal you games, which he did.
Exactly.
He did it against Nashville.
Right.
He does it against pretty much every game he's played in, he's kind of stolen. So it's a great problem to have that the Islanders have a quote-unquote goalie controversy now, but like I said, in a big game where the Islanders can now clinch after Varley started three straight, going 3-0-0, he's back in between the pipes in a win-and-in situation, and that's a great problem to have. Where Sorokin finds his game, you want to see him probably build on that, and hopefully he's ready to go locked in, whether he plays against Pittsburgh or in the first round at some point, but yeah, Varlamov, to me, is the guy you go with right now. He's earned every chance to keep going here.
I agree with you 100%. And speaking of Sorokin getting his game back, he has a great showing against the Rangers. He looked as steady as he had in a long time. I feel like, you know, we talked about the Columbus game. He got the win. I feel like he was shaky in that game. We talked about that. And he gets in against the Rangers. He plays well. They get a point out of it. And look, I mean, they can look at that game and say, I think the Islanders played an excellent game, even though they got the loss. I mean, you know my feelings on overtime and on the shootout especially. That's garbage time for me, but somebody's got to get that extra point. Sorokin not so great in the shootout, but it is what it is. But it's good to see this late in the season that he's able to bounce back, and hopefully if Waugh does have to turn to him or does decide to turn to him in the playoffs, that he'll be able to, you know, put a good performance out there. But this is a game where the Islanders battled. You can even make the argument that the Islanders scored more goals in regulation. One just got called back because that offside call, which was the right call, but an overall good game. I know you had some things to say about Engvall on Twitter. I did as well. I thought he had an excellent game against the Rangers the other night, and it's a good sign if he's a guy who's going at this time of year.
We saw it last year in the second half with Engvall, what he can do. We saw it in the playoffs. That line of him, Nelson, and Palmieri was the best. Now, obviously, Engvall is playing on the third line now, but the speed that he showed yesterday without the puck was, to me, the biggest thing. I mean, you saw him opening up down the middle for passes.
Right.
Which there was a practice early on in Waugh's tenure where Engvall was struggling to open up and Waugh lost it. The first time Waugh had kind of flipped that on a player on the ice. And you see the move that he makes, by the way, taking Holmstrom out to put Fasching in. Mm-hmm. Talk about Fasching, two assists. Great performance by him going
excellent
to the dirty area, something that Holmstrom just has to do a better job of, especially in playoff time. But I think it put emphasis on Engvall that, okay, I have to raise my game. Back-to-back games for him, really good. But again, speed away from the puck, becoming a pass option. He had a check. Yeah, along, you know, he made contact, he used his body. Which, again, it's something we joke about, but when you have a guy that has a stick length that's that long, you don't have to be physical, but when you do bring that physical element, getting him on the forecheck, it does a lot. And I think Engvall has to find a way to be a little more. I'm not saying he's got to go and crush guys.
No, he doesn't have to lay guys out, but you see a lot of circumstances with Engvall where there's, you know, battles for pucks along the boards, and I just feel like he doesn't get in there deep enough to win those battles. He comes away losing a lot of those battles, and I don't think he's using his body enough. He's got a big frame. Get in there. You know, put your shoulder on a guy, and he just doesn't typically do that.
And I thought just dumping and chasing, going after pucks not going south, which has gotten to him a lot of trouble. I just thought that was a perfect example of when Engvall's on his game, how much of a difference maker he can be. Now, we have not seen that enough this year, especially when you get a 7-year deal. You got to hope that you see that more. And the whole desperation playing that way, why hasn't that been there the entire year for a lot of these guys? Why is that not? Why is that just showing up now?
Mm-hmm.
That being said, all that matters is the next game and the next shift. And if he's going to show that now going forward, that's a really good sign for the Islanders.
Better late than never. And if he can keep it up, that's great. That's the question now, is if he can be consistent with it. Because if he disappears over this next stretch, it's not going to do the Islanders much good. But a good sign. We're glad to see it. And let's talk about a negative during that game, 0 for 5 power play. And you spoke on Dobson being out. Obviously, that's a huge factor. But we all know that the Islanders were struggling on the power play without Dobson as well. So this is something that can end up being a huge problem for the Islanders if and when they get into the playoffs, depending on how the refs use their whistles. Thankfully for the Islanders, they tend to not use them as much when the playoffs come around. But it's still going to be an issue if this team can't find ways to put pucks in the net. And it was essentially the difference between getting that second point against the Rangers the other night. And I have to say, I tweeted a couple of times. I was very surprised that there weren't those quote-unquote makeup penalties for the Rangers later in the game, because you had 5 for the Islanders, and usually that's just the way it goes. And the referees are keen to kind of look out for infractions to even those calls up a little bit. But maybe that's a credit to the Islanders for playing a little more discipline, although I do think they got away with a couple the other night against the Rangers. I feel like there was a couple that could have been called. I remember watching the game and like, wow, Lee could have got called for that. Wow, Cizikas could have got called for that. So they got a little bit lucky, and they still get the point. But let's face it, the special teams, especially on the power play side, is an issue.
Yeah, we thought that they had turned a page with the power play early on this year. It was never going to be an elite 1-2, but it was 10th for a while.
Top half of the league? Yeah, for sure.
And you're seeing now, Dobson being out is not an excuse. Again, you talked about it. The power play has struggled with Dobson in the lineup. Now, it's much worse when he's not there. Clearly, they have to next man up kind of mentality. Again, Riley's going to be there, like I said earlier, but it's just the passing. Barzal forced a lot on the power play early, trying to go up across the ice, where you can't do that, especially when you're playing against an aggressive PK. They score short in a goal, which kills you in that game as well. You don't just go 0 for 5. The worst thing you could do is when your power play is not clicking is allow a short in a goal.
Which?
Yep. And I think, too, is Waz talks so much about how got to keep it simple. Mm-hmm. Look at last night. I just always remember these little things. In the playoffs against Carolina, Islanders dominate 5-on-5. I think they scored one power play goal on 10 tries in that series, or 15 tries, whatever it was.
Yeah, something ugly like that.
It was a Sebastian Aho basic wrist shot from the point, bad Palmieri tips.
Mm-hmm.
The final game of the year against Montreal, Aho, point shot, Lee tips. No crazy passing, just get it to the point, get the shots through. Dobson struggled this year in getting the shots through enough, but the passing isn't crisp. When the passing's not crisp, Barzal said today that they're a little out of sync. We saw them go back now. Nelson's back on that top unit. They have Engvall back. So I think they got to find a way to move on without Dobson. We don't know how long he's going to be out. But sure, you're going to play more 5-on-5 in the playoffs than power play. But it is instrumental to success in the playoffs. Even if you don't score, just get shots on goal, make the goalie move, tire him out. That's the biggest thing.
And if your power play isn't going to work, then your penalty kill has to.
Yeah.
Because the other team is still going to get calls too. So it might be 2 minutes or so that the other team isn't having possession of the puck, maybe hopefully not scoring, right? But they're eventually going to get up a man up themselves. So if that happens, the Islanders are going to have to keep, you know, the penalty killers look better. It's definitely looked improved. But if the power play is going to continue to struggle, it has to get to that level that we were used to over the past few years, where they can kind of balance out the ineptitude on the power play so that at least they can keep the goals away man down.
Yeah, they're just looking now here. Over their last 7 games, they're 2 for their last 19 on the power play. That's not going to cut it.
No.
And they're getting the chances 5-on-5. We've seen a lot of games where they get a lot of chances early, don't score. Power play is huge to give you a chance, but also just build momentum. Maybe you had really 3 really good looks, you don't score. Now you pull that into your 5-on-5 play and you score. The problem is when you're not scoring on the power play, not getting chances, can't even break into your own zone, and then you allow a short end goal. I mean, the mindset's got to be mentally very difficult to then go and play 5-on-5 with the confidence. And those top guys have to get it done. Barzal said today, too, that the onus is on him and Horvat. They have to do a better job, which is great to hear from a guy that's been so vocal and so accountable. Mm-hmm. And same thing with Horvat.
Right.
That they're not looking at the Dobson thing saying, oh, Dobson's not there. That's an easy excuse. We don't have Dobson. But Barzal today said, you know, me and Bo have to do a much better job.
I think, you know, they're confident on their power play when they're moving.
Yep.
They get stationary a lot when they're struggling, and they're just basically sending the puck back and forth, you know, from the point back down to the sideboards, and and they're waiting for an opportunity that they're just not creating for themselves. They need to move their feet, and when they do that, they find more success. And I think they just need to throw more pucks at the net and not look for that perfect shot. I get it. You want to get the penalty killers moving. You want to get the goaltender moving, obviously. But even when you're not, all it takes is that juicy rebound through a screen that drops to a guy like Andrews Lee or Kyle Palmieri so they can put it in the net. So hopefully they get a little more shots towards the net, and we see a little more success in the power play.
You nailed it. Getting shots to the net and getting to the net. Pedro said today that they just have to do a better job at getting to the front. There are rebounds. Goalies are too good nowadays. If they see it, they're probably going to control it. But with the screens in front, things that you have to crash the net and get those loose pucks. But I just think once they get into the zone, which, again, Dobson not being there anymore, Barzal is the one that carries it in, but usually drops it to Dobson in the zone. Mm-hmm. Or Horvat, who gives it right to Dobson. They have to figure out a way now to move forward. Maybe not that it's a blessing that Dobson's gone, but maybe they figure out a creative way to get more chances now that Dobson's not there, which may help when Dobson gets back. Because like you said, they were stationary. You pretty much knew what they were going to do. Perimeter, maybe one time. Mm-hmm. Now with Dobson out, it's going to force them to do something different. So maybe that'll help them and get the power play going.
Yeah, for sure. And let's talk about the goaltending a little bit like we were before. So you have the big game tomorrow, win and in. It's all done, right? So let's say Varlamov gets the win. Maybe you give Sorokin the start against Pittsburgh just to basically get the ice under his feet before they go into the playoffs, right? But let's say tomorrow doesn't go the Islanders' way and they find themselves in a situation. Like, I think if they only get a point, they still have to worry about a couple of teams. And let's just assume that's the case. Who gets the start on Wednesday? Is it still Sorokin?
I think,
or do you go back to Varlamov?
I think it matters how the loss happens.
Sure.
If Varley looks terrible and allows, you know, the stat line doesn't matter. If the goals that are going in are bad, then if they lose 2-1 and it's two backdoor odd man rushes and Varley plays a good game, I think you give it to him. But that game for Sorokin against the Rangers was huge because I think Waz always had the trust in Sorokin. He's talked about it numerous times, but Sorokin gets lit up against the Rangers. Regardless of what Varlamov does on Monday, how can you go back to Sorokin in a must win? So I think it depends how they lose.
Sure.
If they clinch, I think Sorokin gets that game just to give Varlamov a breath. I think Varley's going to start game one in the playoffs if they get in. But yeah, I think if Varlamov plays a good game, regardless of the result, he should get the game Wednesday. But yeah, Varley's proven that he's the guy right now. I think it's his crease, and you want Sorokin to be fresh for sure. But you got to win these games, and Sorokin has allowed soft goals in most of his starts as of late. That game against the Rangers, I don't think you could blame him at all for either goal that goes in there, and the shootout's a shootout, but it's Varley's crease for me.
All right, well, let's do a little What's on Tap before we break for Ken Danico.
And now, it's time for What's on Tap, a look ahead at the Islanders' upcoming schedule.
That's right, folks, it's time for What's on Tap, and we got two games left in the regular season, games 81 and 82. 81 is a big one against the New Jersey Devils tomorrow night. And look, like we said before, win it in. Get 2 points. You got nothing to worry about Wednesday. Wednesday is just a leisure game against the Pittsburgh Penguins. You can rest some players if you want. There is nothing at stake if they get 2 points against the Devils. So that's huge. As we've talked about, Semyon Varlamov is going to get the start. That's who Patrick Waugh wants in between the pipes to secure those 2 points. If they don't get the 2 points, then it gets a little hairier, and then they have to face the Pittsburgh Penguins, who are also fighting for their lives here to get into the playoffs. So that would make a crucial, huge game for the Islanders against the Pittsburgh Penguins. It's possible that even if they lose against the Devils tomorrow that they get in.
Yep.
We have to look and see what other results happen, and somebody could do the Islanders some favors. Maybe Washington loses, maybe Detroit loses, whatever the case may be. But for now, today's conversation, we have two potentially huge games against the New Jersey Devils and the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah, Varlamov hasn't faced the Devils this year. Sorokin's gotten all three, 0-2-1. When you look at the last time they were at Prudential Center, that was a catastrophic loss. That was had a lead in the third period. The Devils tie it late, Leaf fights, and then they allow the go-ahead goal with like 3 seconds left, and they lose that one.
Right.
They don't get a point.
Right.
They end up following it up with an overtime win against the Carolina Hurricanes. But this is a Devils team without Jack Hughes, and they're a team that wants to, you know, ruin the Islanders' playoff chances. This is a team that there's a rivalry here. We know what happened last time they played. Lee knee on knee with Heischer.
Right.
That happens. Mm-hmm. And again, a 4-0 loss for the Islanders where they didn't come out playing strong hockey at all. So for the Islanders, again, you have to start strong. There's no excuse. This is a must win for them. Sure, they don't have to win to get in, but we talked to Barzal today. He doesn't want it to come down to, no one wants to come down to Wednesday hoping. They want it to get it done
right
over with Monday.
And what sort of confidence does that give anybody if they can't beat the Devils tomorrow in a win and in situation? Right. You're playing against a team who's tumbled down the standings. Obviously, haven't met expectations. We'll talk to Ken Danico about that a little bit more. They have big injuries on the table here. I mean, this is a game that the Islanders should go in and just wipe the floor with, or at least win by a goal here. Let's just get into this game, take the 2 points, and let Wednesday be an easygoing day for them. But we've seen this happen to teams. Yeah. Like, look at Pittsburgh last year. All they had to do was beat Chicago last year, late in the season. They couldn't even do that. So you can get a surprise situation here. And these New Jersey Devils are not the Chicago Blackhawks of last year. They still have talent. They still have good players. So this is a game that the Islanders have to get up for. They have to come out strong in the early going like they did against the Rangers and maybe pot some early goals and then just take control of the game and coast themselves to 2 points.
The Devils have a very young back end. And what you got to do is forecheck them and pressure them to make mistakes. They're young. They're still learning. That's been... Outside the goaltending, their defensive play has been terrible, which is why they've allowed so many goals and they've struggled. So you got to get the pucks behind them and put pressure on them. But they're looking ahead to the Penguins. It's a team that's 5-1-1 in their last 7 games. They're going to play Nashville on Monday, which is going to be tough. Barry Trotz's squad's been really good. So this Penguins team, we talked about it last week. Crosby has turned it up and the team has rallied behind him. And you don't want to leave it up to that. But Wednesday is going to be a monumental game for that for sure, because even if the Islanders do clinch, Penguins are still going to try to... They have to win that game. The Islanders could ruin the Penguins' chances as well.
Sure. I mean, the Islanders aren't going to be looking to put them in a situation where they could potentially hurt themselves or anything. I mean, look, they're going to take it easy that game if they win tomorrow.
Yeah, for sure.
They might even rest a guy or two, and they might be doing the Penguins a favor on Wednesday, you know, if they win tomorrow. But if that ends up being a game that has stakes for both teams, it's going to be must-see TV. It's going to be Sidney Crosby versus Matt Barzal, and... It's going to be a show, and as a hockey fan, I'd love to see it, but as somebody who favors the New York Islanders, I'd rather the Islanders just take care of business tomorrow.
There's actually a situation, I don't know the exact situation, where if either team gets a point on Wednesday, if things don't go the way that the Islanders want to go, that a point for both sides gets both teams in. So you could situation where it's a third period and just put the puck in the corner, everyone's going to play for a tie.
Right.
That would be very interesting to see what happens there. But yeah, Islanders take care of business Monday against the Devils. They don't have to worry about what happens in the Pittsburgh game. But again, Pittsburgh is going to be fighting very hard. So if the Islanders make that a situation where one team has to win to get in and their team misses it or whatever the situation may be, it's going to be very tough to beat this Penguins team right now.
Indeed, and we shall see what happens. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in to twitch.tv/HockeyNightNY and all your favorite streaming and podcast providers. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Devils legend Ken Danico will be joining us.
If you're an Islander fan, there's nothing like a big win, a tasty meal, and great company. And Blue Line Deli and Bagels provides all that and more. Owned and operated by diehard Islander fans, Blue Line Deli and Bagels happily serves Bagel Boss bagels and a full menu of delicious food and beverages. Whether it's breakfast favorites like pancakes and omelets, specialty heroes and wraps like the Hat Trick and the Hip Check, or fresh-made coffee and smoothies, Blue Line Deli and Bagels has you covered. So stop on in to the flagship location at 719 West Jericho Turnpike in Huntington or the new spot at 217 Carlton Avenue in East Islip for their familiar friendly service and the best food around. And don't forget, you can always check out the menu and order online at BlueLineDeli.com or pick up the phone and call 631-944-3222. Blue Line Deli and Bagels. Our goal is to make you a hero.
Thanks for giving some time to our sponsors. Ready to talk more Isles? The train rolls on right here on Hockey Night in New York.
That's right, folks. The train rolls on here at Hockey Night in New York, and it is our pleasure to welcome on to the program Devils legend, Mr. Ken Danico. Ken, the Islanders have a big game against the New Jersey Devils tomorrow night. Obviously, a win-and-in situation for them. The Devils had a tough year this year. Injuries, guys going down, high expectations leading in. I just want to start by asking you, what happened with the New Jersey Devils where they fell short of their expectations this year?
Oh, boy. We need a long time. I mean, obviously, it was not a year that they expected or any of us did. But having said that, I certainly, for one, know things are not always linear. And the jump they had made from one year to the next was probably too big of a leap. It was fun. It was great. They won a playoff round against their rival, the Rangers. So you come into this season with higher expectations and... You know, teams are more prepared for you. They're not sneaking up on anybody. And it just they just couldn't find consistency. They never lost more than 3 games in a row all season long. That's not bad. They never won more than 3 games all season long in a row. So it just was one of those years, up, down, win, lose, win, lose, win a couple. And yes, goaltending was a big factor. Goaltending, you guys know, it's as important as anything. Last year, VTech had a 9-10 save percentage, played extremely well, made the timely saves that you need from your goaltenders in tight games. Schmid was really good as a young player, and we saw what he did in the playoffs coming in game three against the Rangers and kind of caught lightning in a bottle. But and I think he's got a bright future, but it was a little too much for these young guys, Dawes and Schmid, to handle this year. They had flashes where they played very well, but between all the goaltending, it didn't work out, and it's really hard to win hockey games with goaltending. That's not making an excuse, fellas. It's just that and injuries. Jack Hughes and Nico Hischier were in and out, not playing stretches in the first 40 games as one was injured, the other guy was injured. That hurts. The team's not quite there yet as far as depth to be missing key pieces. And, oh, boy, did I forget how important Dougie Hamilton is on the back end as well on the power play. When you need a big goal, he's a game changer. So those are a lot of the issues, but it is what it is. You learn from it, and should be a pretty sour taste in the Devils and this young core's mouth. I think they've got an excellent group. They need to add a little bit, but... And I will say, if they happen to have Allen and Kakinen, we may not be talking not being in the playoffs if they could have had them 30 days earlier. Ifs and buts, but that's the way it goes, and they learn from it, and hopefully they'll become a perennial playoff team, which I think they're very capable.
Hey, Ken, Stefan here. Thanks so much for joining us today. I just wanted to ask you about two young defensemen. You got Luke Hughes and Nemec. Just what have you seen from them as they try to develop and take the next steps in their career?
And that's another thing. The Devils were much younger on the back end with Ball, the two guys you mentioned, Nemec and Hughes, some of the veteran guys. And you could say to pretty well throughout the Devils lineup, everybody had careers. Years last year, this year, everybody dipped a little bit. It happens. You just can't all do it together. Another reason why they're sitting where they are and only have one game left against the Islanders tomorrow. But Nemec and Hughes, I mean, first let's start with Luke Hughes. I mean, he's a special player, and he's going to be outstanding. I can't wait till next year or maybe even year three to see where he's at as he continues to grow and balance out, understanding the defensive side of the game. His skating ability is remarkable. It's second to none. I think he broke a Devils record this year for points as a rookie from the back end. So, yeah, the offense is there. The hockey IQ, the intelligence, and the great skating ability to be able to make plays. Now it's about learning, your end of the rink, and he's gotten so much better. He uses his stick well. The last month's been really solid for Luke Hughes after going through some growing pains like any young defenseman or anybody, really, coming to the National Hockey League and the rigors of an 82-game schedule. I think he's been... He's right on pace for being or kind of what exactly we expected. Flashes of brilliance, things he can do that other guys can't because of his legs and his like I said, his great skating ability. But it's learning everything, and he's got to grow into his body. He's a big guy that once he gets a little physically stronger, a little more mature, he's going to be able to handle. The board work and all the little 50-50 battles because he's going to be a big kid. He just needs to fill out a little bit. He's already, he's 6'2 from a height standpoint, but I'm really excited about him. I think he's going to be a star in this league, no question about it. Nemec, on the flip side, two-way guy. Just a good, solid, probably a little stronger already at a young age than Luke right now as far as the lower center of gravity and being able to handle one-on-one battles. Did he go through some lumps along the way? Of course he did. Any young player will, in particular, the responsibility young defensemen have. But I think the Devils are in really good hands with these two young guys. Do they need to support him in the offseason and add a veteran or two that just knows how to defend and is big and maybe a little more physical? Absolutely. But these two guys will be a top pairing or top two defensemen, three defensemen in your lineup for a long, long time. But, yeah, so this year you have to go through some ups and downs, some mistakes. That's just part of the process. And that was a little bit of some of the Devils' problems on the back end this year as well. Besides the goaltending, they didn't bail each other out kind of thing. The veteran guys too are responsible. They just didn't play quite as well as they did last year. And Dougie Hamilton, like I said, was a huge hole. But love the two kids. I think they're going to be really good for a long time.
Absolutely, Ken. And, you know, the Devils, they have the opportunity to play spoiler here against the New York Islanders. And unfortunately for them, they don't have a postseason to look forward to. The game obviously doesn't have a lot of stakes. So when you see players like this and young players on a team like this, how do they get up for a game when they know there's not a lot at stake for them?
Well, look, anytime you play a team in your division, it doesn't matter where you're at or really nothing to play for from the standpoint of it's one more game and you're finished for the season. I mean, they've had success against New York this year. They're 3-0 against the Islanders, I believe, and they want to keep that going. Every game, regardless of where you're at or if it's game 82 and you're not going to playoffs, it is a learning curve. It's a process of understanding playing a team that needs the game, playing, you know, in these types of situations. You can lean on it in a playoff game next year. I mean, all these things are add up, one play, one period, whatever it may be. And they're pros. You got to play it. You play right to win, you play to compete every night. Management looks at that. I mean, obviously, when you have a disappointing season or you underachieve, most of the Devils players will tell you, and all of us say, they want to finish strong. So, look, the Islanders are going to have to play hard to beat them, I'll tell you that, because they know exactly that everything is an addition, especially for young guys. Every moment, even veteran guys, they want to finish their season on a high note. Don't care who you are, if you don't have that kind of mentality, then you know you might not be part of it moving forward in the future.
Hey Ken, have you seen a difference in the team just the way they've been playing since Travis Green took over as the interim head coach?
Oh man, Travis has got a lot of passion and heart. That's what I love. I mean, look, I think coaches take too much blame and sometimes they get too much credit. I love Lindy as well. I mean, the guy's been a veteran guy for a long time around the league. He couldn't stop pucks. He couldn't make plays. They coach, they preach what they expect from their team. And, yeah, it's been better, I think, a little bit under Travis. Still, the wins weren't as consistent enough to get them a playoff team, to become a playoff team this year. But, he had a lot of things to, you know, change a little bit. Get guys to understand what he expects from them, and I just feel they were much better defensively, no question. They started to play a lot more united, structured under Travis Green, and we'll see where we go from here. I mean, obviously there's going to be a thorough process with management and seeing and interviewing coaches, whether that happens to be Travis Green moving forward next year or whoever it may be. I know they're going to really do a deep dive and what's available. But I've enjoyed Travis. I've talked to him a lot. I know his thought process. I know his competitiveness. I think a coach needs that kind of fire. And I'd be fine if it was Travis Green. But for me, you've got to do your due diligence. That's all.
Ken, what do you just make
moving
of this?
Forward, I mean, yeah.
What do you just make of this playoff race in the East right now?
Well, I think it's fantastic for the game. I mean, I've always said it, everybody says it. The competitive balance in the National Hockey League right now is at an all-time high. I believe it is just getting in and you've got a shot. I would say legitimately, I can name 10 teams that I believe can win the Stanley Cup right now. So that's what makes it so unpredictable. We always see upsets, obviously, but it's that close. And just look at what's going down to the wire. I mean, obviously, in the East, and where we talked about the Devils a lot, nobody really wanted it for quite some time. Nobody was consistent. Everybody kept winning two, losing three, winning a couple, losing a handful. So nobody took charge. The Islanders started to near the end. Their goaltending again played extremely well. For me, that's the biggest part for the New York Islanders, is they've got two excellent goaltenders, and that gives them an advantage. But teams like Washington, teams like Philly, where they couldn't get a save, or the Flyers wouldn't be in the predicament they're in. They couldn't get a save for for 10 games. All of a sudden, for the last two, Harrison's done a really good job and played well, beating the Rangers and Devils 1-0 yesterday. So it's so unpredictable. The West is probably a little deeper than the East, in my opinion, right now. But that's why what's going to make the playoffs so damn exciting. And I'm really looking forward to it because I just, like a lot of people, have no idea which way this is going to go. No idea till last day of the season who's going to be in the playoffs, in particular in the East, really.
For sure, Ken, no doubt. Definitely going to be an exciting playoffs. And with the New York Islanders, there's certainly a lot of Devil alumni over there, part of the Devils family, with Lou Lamoriello and John McClain and even his son over there, and Kyle Palmieri obviously being a former Devil. Do you find yourself keeping an extra eye or extra tabs on the Islanders because you have some familiarity with those guys?
Well, first and foremost, Lou Lamoriello is like a second father to me or an uncle. I mean, the utmost respect for him. I mean, we've been through a lot together. We had a lot of success together. And there's no one more loyal than Lou Lamoriello. So anytime I get to catch up with him, I did last time we played on the island and spoke with him for about an hour in his office. And then there's nothing like it. Lou Lamoriello is a big reason why I'm fortunate enough to have three Stanley Cup championships that I was part of, because he was our architect and he really, gave us that attitude we need to be a champion. Because every team, like we talked about now with the balance in the league, even more so than my era, it's imperative. You have to have guys that understand and character and what it takes. And I don't think anybody knows that better than Lou, for certain, from my standpoint. So, yeah, of course, I always watch. I mean, when he plays my team, of course I want to beat the you-know-what out of him. That's just the way it is. It's in my DNA. I'm a lifer. I'm a Devil guy through and through. I bleed the colors. Lou was for a long time, and now he's moved on, first Toronto, not the New York Islanders. But I don't have to watch anymore. I watch hockey 24/7 anyway. So anyway,
awesome.
But when it's to do with Lou, Johnny Mack, who I won a cup with, obviously, and real nice to see his son excelling and doing a really good job in our role, as a role player and chipping in. I mean, and I can't imagine how exciting that is for Johnny Mack as far as watching your son. I would believe it's probably more exciting than him scoring any kind of goal or championship, just watching your son, get his opportunity to fulfill his dream as well. So, obviously I'm going to watch him, but I watch everything. I love the game. I love the intrigue of the playoffs, like I just mentioned. And may the best team win. And sometimes it's a bounce, it's a break. You got to get fortunate. But I just think it's going to be a whale of a playoff this year.
Ken, you talk about Travis Green and the passion that he shows. Patrick Waugh behind the Islanders bench now. Just what are your initial thoughts when you found out he was hired? And what have you seen really from the Islanders since he's walked through the doors?
Well, it's been very up and down, right? It doesn't happen overnight. I mean, obviously, they had won 6 in a row at one point, lost 6 in a row until they've gotten back and right at the ship to get themselves right where they need to be. I know it's still not 100%, but pretty close as far as being a playoff team, but you can't take it for granted. Look, he's a winner. He's one of the greatest goaltenders of all time. I mean, all the great players and the ones that I played with as well, and the Hall of Famers like Patrick Watt, they don't accept losing. They don't accept, nothing but 100-110%, as you like to say, from every player. So they just have that internal drive, and he's no different. And you can see it. And I saw it when he coached Colorado, to tell you the truth. I mean, you can tell he's a guy. I think he's gotten them playing a little more back to their identity. I think that's maybe what was missing. Look, the Islanders, and I'm going to be brutally honest, they've got good players. Are they the most talented team? Absolutely not. Do they have great goaltending? Do they have to rely on that and rely on their defensive structure? They'll tell you that. That's how they had success over the last handful of years in making playoffs and stuff. So I think they got caught in between for a while there. It seems that he's gotten them dialed more into being, the difficult team to play against. Big, strong. That's what will make them successful in the playoffs once they get there.
No doubt, Ken. And last one from me. You look at this exciting playoffs that you were talking about before. Are there any heavy hitters here that you're looking at that you think might be a favorite out west, favorite out east, or you think it's just going to be a dogfight to the end?
I think it's going to be a dogfight, but obviously you look at some of the top teams, the Rangers. I mean, look, they are where they are for a reason, fighting for a President's Trophy. Carolina are they ready to take that next step? I think they might be. They added a couple of pieces, maybe something they've missed in the last few seasons. And again, some of Kuznetsov has been an incredible playoff player, especially when the Capitals won a Stanley Cup. And so are they ready to jump to the next level? But the team I'm looking at, which, you know, they lost guys, but they're fighting for the President's Trophy as well, and they won the President's Trophy last year, is the Boston Bruins. I just have a feeling that you always look, and I say it because my reasoning is I think they can be dangerous because they had that taste last year and that sour taste in their mouth after being up 3-1 in round one, breaking a single season record for wins and points all time on their way to a President's Trophy. I've been on teams where you come close, you have heartbreaking losses, disappointing losses, upsets like they did against the Panthers. I think it's going to harden them and make them that much stronger come this year, this playoffs, this go around. But again, you might as well flip a coin and pick out of a hat. I think it's that close. Out east, Dallas looks great. Yeah, Colorado's a good team, but I'm not underestimating the Vancouver Canucks. One of my favorites as well is the Edmonton Oilers. I think they might be poised and ready. I think they're more well-equipped for playoff hockey now if their goaltender continues to just be there for them and make the saves he needs to and give them a chance. That's a team I think could go all the way. But you never count out the Vegas Golden Knights have flown under the radar because they're the defending champs. I can go on and on. How about the Winnipeg Jets going into Colorado? That's regular season.
Right.
Slate is late green. Winning 7-0 and beating Dallas 3-0 a couple nights earlier in Dallas on a road trip, truly remarkable. So they're feeling good about their game. They've got, as I talk about the Islander goaltending duo, Winnipeg's got as good a duo as anybody in the National Hockey League as well, and that could carry them a long way. So I looked at dark horses like that, even though they had a lot of points this year. People are going to still consider the Winnipeg Jets a dark horse to win the Stanley Cup or advanced out of the West. But I just don't think you can take anybody for granted this year. There's just so many teams, like I said, and I'm sure everybody feels it. So these brackets, when we fill these brackets out, I mean, you might as well throw darts in the dartboard, really. I think it's going to be that difficult in my estimation. And we're going to go, wow, I didn't see that one. Oh, wow, I didn't see that team beating that team. You know what I mean? So it's going to be a lot. That's what makes it intriguing. That's what makes it great. And that's why we love our playoffs for our sport. There's nothing like it. The best playoffs in all the sports or best game, we always feel that way because of the unpredictability.
No doubt about it, Ken. You're absolutely right. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. And listen, we cannot thank you enough for giving us your time today. Awesome, awesome stuff. We really appreciate it and hope to talk to you again down the road.
All right, fellas. Take care. Pleasure being on with you.
You too, Ken. Take care. Thanks
a
lot.
See you, Ken.
All right, that was New Jersey Devils legend Ken Danico breaking it down, talking about the potential playoff dark horses, playoff favorites, and we'll see how it goes. But it's going to be an awesome playoffs, regardless of who gets in. We still got to figure out what happens here in the East. We got a little positional situation going out in the West, too. We don't know who's playing who yet. We already know what teams are getting in, but the East still has about five teams trying to cram themselves into two spots, so it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. We'll take one more break, but before we do, I want to tell everybody about Main Street Board Game Cafe in Huntington Village on Long Island's North Shore. Games for sale and for open play. Food and drink, beer and wine, fun and friends. Bring the magic of phones down, eyes up, tabletop board games to your family. Our staff will help you find the right game from old favorites to the hottest new releases. We have everything from strategic to easy party games. Get off your screens for a night your family will remember. Looking for meetups to join? Our Magic the Gathering, Dungeons & Dragons, Lurkana, and organized play communities are welcoming for all. We also do parties and corporate events located at 307 Main Street in Huntington Village. Go to mainstboardgamecafe.com for more information. Main Street Board Game Cafe. Find your crowd. Unplug your game. And with that, we're going to take one more break. When we come back, it'll be time for the Hero of the Week.
Attention all artists, storytellers, and creators of all kinds. It's time to make your content stand out above the rest. And Floored Media is the place to make your visions become a reality. Maybe you want to elevate your podcast and add some video, or turn that novel you wrote into an audiobook. Or maybe you just need the right space to produce your daily vlog. Whether you're a seasoned veteran or just starting out, and no matter the project, Floored Media has the professional facilities, exceptional staff, and intimate atmosphere to breathe life into your creative passions at every step of the process. If it's engineering, production, live streaming, or post-production, you name it, Floored Media does it all. Conveniently located in the heart of Rockville Center and only a 30-minute ride from New York City on the Long Island Railroad, your creative incubator awaits. Go to floridmedia.com for more information and email contact at floridmedia.com for packages, rates, and availability. Hone in on your unique voice and start your project with Florid Media.
Welcome back to the program, ladies and gentlemen. When you hear this song, that means it's time for the Hero of the Week, brought to you by the Blue Line Deli and Bagels. Hero of the Week, and we just happen to be here at Blue Line Deli and Bagels at 719 West Jericho Turnpike in Huntington. So let's take off here with the Heroes of the Week. Stefan Rosner, what do you got?
There are so many good players that you could have chosen, but I'm going to go with Patrick Waugh. When Lou Lamoriello hires Patrick Waugh, it's because Lou trusts Patrick's gut. And he's made some decisions as of late. Going with Varlamov, the way he has, backed it up by his gut. The line changes he's made, even after wins, taking Holmstrom out, putting Fashion in, that automatically works. Moving Engvall down to the third line, I just think with this is the type of this part of the season where you need to trust your coach is doing the right thing to help you get wins. Not everything Waugh is going to do is going to work, but right now, going with Varlamov, even going back to Sorokin in a game that, you know, wasn't you already guaranteed a playoff spot. You needed that win or to get a point at least. And going with a guy that struggled, even though he's been a little better as of late, definitely a gut move. It pays off. Like I said, the Fashing move paid off. Engvall being on the third line with Lee in that line in general has been a lot better. So I think everything Waugh's done this past week, sure, the players have to play, they have to score, they have to defend, the goalies have to make the saves. But Waugh's mindset he's given to the team since he's walked in, but just trusting his gut, has played a part in this Islanders going on the 6-0-1 stretch here.
Yeah, he's made a lot of gut decisions over the past few weeks. We've talked about, too, even coming out of wins, changing up his lineup, where we know in previous coaching regimes, usually they just stick with the guys that got the win before, right? So he doesn't have a problem with pulling a guy out, bringing a guy in, and a lot of those decisions have worked well. So hat tip to you. Nice little Hero of the Week with Patrick Waugh. I'm going to give you mine now, and that is none other than Kyle Palmieri. Goals in four straight games, all big, big goals. Obviously, he got the OT winner. Beautiful shot against the Montreal Canadiens. You're also talking about most goals since 2015-16. He has 28 right now. Most points since 16-17 with 51 points right now. So this has been by far the best regular season for Kyle Palmieri in a New York Islander sweater. And we know what he can do in the playoffs. He is a clutch player. So hopefully we see more of that if and when the Islanders get into the postseason dance. I don't want to jinx anything here. It looks good, but it's not official yet. So hopefully we see him putting in some more goals. But folks, those are your heroes of the week, and it is brought to you by the Blue Line Deli and Bagels. Half Price Hero, which is The Godfather, featuring Cappy Ham, Genoa Salami, Pepperoni, Provolone, Lettuce and Tomato, Oil and Vinegar on a Hero. Stop on in right here to Blue Line Deli and Bagels, Huntington location in Huntington. Mention Hockey Night New York and get half off The Godfather. So that was the Hero of the Week. And why don't we take it now to the Snake Den?
Welcome to the Snake Den with Jake the Snake Rosen.
It's great. I can hear it now.
Go ahead, buddy. It's your time.
Well, yeah. No, well, I have to ask, did you do The Godfather because of Kyle Palmieri?
There may have been a link between Kyle Palmieri and The Godfather. I'm not going to lie.
That's very clever. I like what you did there.
Thank you. Thank you. The brain works every now and then.
Yeah.
So unlike our Bluetooth on the board. But well, go ahead.
Too bad. But
indeed.
Yeah, I don't want to jinx anything either. Things are looking good. So I just wanted to say that I'd rather the Islanders draw the Rangers than the Hurricanes.
Okay.
Why?
Please explain yourself.
Well, firstly, the Rangers have one game left, 112 points, and their last game is against Ottawa. That's tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Canes have two games left. They play Chicago tonight, and then they play Columbus.
Right.
So that looks like two wins probably for the Canes, but also the Rangers should pick up a win against Ottawa. But I just think that the Islanders' style of play, it would be so much more effective against the Rangers. Also, according to MoneyPuck, Carolina is second best in the league at 5-on-5 expected goals for, whereas the Rangers are 22nd.
That is a vast difference.
Yeah, and I think that we all know the Islanders' best game is their 5-on-5 game by far. You stay out of the box against the Rangers, I think they can handle that series. You get into the box against the New York Rangers, they'll put you away.
For sure, and we've seen already in playoffs past that the Islanders have struggled against the Carolina Hurricanes, even if you go back to that Brooklyn year. But The Canes are just a tough out for the – I mean, they're tough out for anybody, but yep. they're a tough out just because of, as you just said, how well they play 5-on-5. They can play – you know, they kind of beat the Islanders at their own game when they faced in the playoffs the last couple of times, right, where they know how to play a defensive lockdown type of style of hockey where it's kind of like, all right, Islanders, you wanna lull us to sleep here? We can lull you back, you know, and we yep. can play a low-scoring game. And they may not have the goaltenders that the Islanders have, but the talent that they have up and down the roster in front of the goaltenders is good enough to beat almost anybody in this league. So
yeah.
I definitely hear what you're saying there, and it's funny to say that by comparison to a Rangers team who may be about to win the President's Trophy yeah. and obviously they have a lot of firepower themselves. But, you know, you brought those numbers out, and the 5-on-5 is the Islanders' bread and butter, and it is not for the Rangers, and that could end up being the key.
Yeah, and also when the Islanders and Rangers face off, you really just don't know what's going to happen there.
For sure.
It's a rivalry. It could go anyway. I remember when the Islanders would suck and they'd still somehow manage to beat a very good
yeah.
Rangers team.
And vice versa.
Yeah. So you never know. I think that the fans would love it. I know I would love it for sure.
Absolutely. Give it to me.
Even if like they play Carolina and they get past them and the Rangers get past them, you could still see the Rangers in round two. So I think that this is something that hockey fans here in New York have been vying for so long. I know the last time it happened, I wasn't even a thought yet. So
I wasn't a thought. You weren't a thought. There are not a lot of thoughts out there at that point.
No, but, no.
The internet wasn't a thought?
No, not really. Not really. That was in its infant stages as well. Yeah, it's been a long time. It's 94.
Yeah,
long time.
Been a long time, yeah. For sure. Yeah. And you make a great point, too, and you do as well, with the goaltending for Carolina, that's the concern. But when you play strong enough in front of your goalie, like Danico just said, just have your goalie make the saves he has to make, talking about Edmonton right. there. Right. With Skinner, as the Islanders actually played the Hurricanes pretty well this year. 2-1-1.
Right.
Different animal in the playoffs. And yes. I do think the Islanders actually match up better against the Rangers because of that 5-on-5. We saw in the playoffs with the Hurricanes, the Islanders were better 5-on-5 last year. Special teams just killed them, and the Hurricanes are even better now. Like getting Jake Guentzel, getting Kuznetsov.
Right.
It's an elite team. So I think for the Islanders, both matchups would be difficult, but this is the playoffs. You got to find a way, and I think the Islanders do match up better against the Rangers. It would do a world of wonders for both fan bases. It's been quite some time
yeah,
since that.
Let's see it. And to all you scaredy cats out there, just embrace it. This whole, I don't want to play the Rangers and lose and give them bragging rights and all that. Put that stuff aside. Let's just see some amazing New York hockey that we haven't seen. I was about to say haven't seen in 30 years, but the truth is that series was not amazing. That yeah. series was far from amazing. But I think I would like to think that this series would be much more exciting than that series was back in 94, because Ron Hextall isn't going to be between the pies for the Islanders this yeah. time, and I think that'll make a huge difference. But to both your guys' points, let's see some Islanders-Rangers at first or second round. Let's do it.
And absolutely.
I think, too, you look back and you look last year's, the Panthers played the Bruins. Everyone said there's no way the Bruins lose. Panthers are going to get steamrolled, and all of the pressure was on Boston.
Right,
and
exactly.
And the Panthers win that series. And if you're the Rangers, again, the Rangers aren't going to be upset to play anyone, get to the playoffs, whatever, but in that series, if the Islanders do match up against the Rangers in the first round, all of the pressure is on the Rangers.
Hell yeah.
So for the Islanders, they could definitely take advantage of that. The fan base is obviously will make that a must-watch game. I think it could go 6-7. I don't think it's going to be either way a sweep. It's just the way these two teams play. But the Islanders have a chance to do an upset because this is just how it is. All the pressure would be on the New York Rangers.
Well, let's get there first. But this is as close as it's been maybe in a couple of years. The Islanders had a chance to meet them in the second round in 16 or 15 when they played the Capitals in the first round. They lost in Game 7 to the Caps. Had they won, we would have seen a second round bout between the Rangers and the Islanders. It didn't work out. Hopefully we see something this year.
Before you state the snake den real quick, the COVID, when the season got short and they continued in the summer, point percentage-wise, if the Islanders get that extra point in that last game
you
or whatever.
You mentioned that.
Yeah,
that's right. Yes.
I don't know if play the Rangers in round one. But
that's
let's escape
right.
The snake den.
Please.
Now. I just want to talk about...
Let's get the hell out of there.
Isles Fix.
Sorry,
Islanders country. Get your daily fix of Isles news, highlights, and analysis by subscribing to Isles Fix, the only Monday through Friday Islanders newsletter sent directly to your inbox. Sign up for free or become a paid subscriber for added benefits at islesfix.substack.com. And now it's time for Questions Brewing.
It's time for Questions Brewing. So go ahead, ask us a question.
And so, some technical difficulties today. How you doing? How's your arm, buddy?
You know, I think I'm doing everything but great right now.
Yeah. Well, you got a big smile on your face.
No,
so
I'm kidding.
Good,
but how could I be anything other than great? Great food, great place, great fans, great team, great friends, and great guests.
Were you, obviously nothing towards Ken, but were you dying for that interview to end just so that your arm could get a rest there? Was your arm
I
okay?
I switched a couple times. But
okay.
Like,
good thing you have too.
You might think it's easy to just hold this position.
Right.
But it's, yeah, it really isn't. It really is a while.
I was keeping the corner of my eye on you a little bit just to make sure you're all right. I was feeling
well. Wait, Ed, do that position again?
Oh, it's this.
Oh, it's like what Pelic did for 10 seconds in the neutral zone. Everyone flipped that.
Wow. Oh, my God.
Wow. Nice
Stefan,
job.
You should know. You're holding phones and microphones in front of players all day.
That's true.
The funniest, this is not easy.
It is painful. After a while, it's like we were in Florida, and, you know, Shannon was doing it, and her arm got tired, and she switched, and Wah goes, "You okay?" Her arm just goes, "Yeah, just you get tired. It's crazy. Funny. The phone weighs nothing, but I feel your pain."
Yeah, no, it was great, though. We made it work.
You took one for the team. We got a great interview out of Ken, so we appreciate that. And look, now you get to lead the charge on questions.
And anyway,
man,
now we have some questions.
Let's go.
And we're going to start off with Mr. Joey Pickles here.
All righty.
Joey Pickles, if the Isles clinch tomorrow, do we see Barzi and Horvat off on Wednesday? If they do we see Bolduc or Wallstrom on Wednesday? Or perhaps someone from Bridgeport?
Let's start with Bridgeport. I don't think anyone's being called up. I think you'll get some players called up in the playoffs just to bring them there. Mm-hmm. Honestly, you don't want to see anyone get hurt. I have a hard time seeing Horvat allowing, or Barzal even allowing them to not be in the lineup. I think it'll come down to resting players. Like, I could see someone on the back end, like a Bortuzzo, maybe put Bolduc in, put Aho on his offside, whatever the case may be. I don't think you'll see Wallstrom get in. Maybe you'll see Holmstrom get in for somebody else. Just the competitors that they are, their final prep for the playoffs. Because you think about it, too, is if they don't play Wednesday and the playoffs start set, that's a lot of days between games. And I think guys that are feeling really good, especially if you win against the Devils, how good they're feeling right now, the last thing they want, they still have to figure out the power play, too. So this is their final tune-up.
That's a good point.
If they beat the Devils and the power play struggles, you go Wednesday. I mean, you need to figure it out. There's not many practice days left.
Why mess with what you have right now, I guess?
Well, not only that, but I think that's actually a really good point. The fact that it's almost like, you know, a trial in the wild to get your power play out there one more time before the real games start, if they're fortunate enough to be in by the time Wednesday comes around. Because it's funny, I was sitting here being like, you know what, maybe arrest these guys. Maybe arrest the top guns, anybody who might be dinged up that we don't know about, too, right? And that'll be interesting, too. Maybe there will be a guy or two sat, and that might reveal that they are dinged up a little bit here. But to your point, maybe you want those guys out there running some power plays, but it's just... That game is going to mean something for the Penguins. It's absolutely going to mean something for the Penguins. So they're going to be coming out hard. They're going to be playing a tough game. And so it obviously would just be a nightmare to put out, you know, some of your top guns there and having somebody on the Pens come in and smash somebody into the boards and you lose them for the playoffs. So, I mean, thankfully that's a decision that Patrick Waugh has to make and not me. But, you know, I was leaning towards rest these guys, but maybe they could use the – well, we know they could use the practice to work on the power play.
And you could also, middle of the game, see how the vibes are, what's going on, how physical it is, and then maybe a couple of shifts a period. You take guys out, sit them. I mean,
Play them 13 minutes instead of 20, something like that.
Go with the good old Rempe mindset, 5 minutes.
Sure.
But I just think with the lack of practice time, with so many still issues with this team, it's her last real – tune up where the games actually matter for a team that potentially do play in the playoffs, a team that's desperate, which is exactly what playoff hockey is. So it truly is the final test for all that stuff.
Yeah. Next question is from another than Tom Boyle, who is in the house today.
Hey, what's up,
Tom? You want to read it, Tom, or should I? I'll read it. Don't worry about it.
I'm going to take the choice away.
You know, I still like reading questions. You know, it's still my segment here.
Okay.
All right. So Tom says, do you think the offside play yesterday that took a goal away was correct?
Yeah, it was definitely. I think it was interference, but it was correct. I mean, it was indeed offside.
Yeah, it's funny. When it happened live, I didn't think it was that bad. The play on the blue line, like I nudged him. I was like, actually kind of smart. You know,
genius move.
Yeah, pull him offside, nullify a potential goal. But then I saw the replay and I was like, oh, he actually took him out a little bit.
Yeah.
I was like, that could have been a penalty. So then I saw PK Subban ranting about it afterwards. He wanted the call on the ESPN broadcast or the ABC broadcast.
If you hear PK Subban back anything against just always PK with the way he played, right? Especially at the end of his career.
right.
Like, for example, you saw the Gallagher hit where he flips the you-know-what, who played with Gallagher.
Right.
And you see that where he's saying, that's got to be called. You know when it's a physical moment in a game and PK's on the side of the person that got hit, he's probably right.
Yeah, that's probably true. So, yeah, but look, the offside was the right call, but you look at the play and...
Pierre Engvall.
Yeah, oh, what a shot. I mean, what a goal. But
that goal the other day against the Montreal Canadiens where he peels around and snipes.
That
and
was beautiful.
He has that one. That should take away from that.
For a split second, and I know people mix them up all the time, but I legit thought it was Brock Nelson. And I was like, oh, damn, that was Pierre Engvall. So that was nice to see. Hopefully we get more of that. But, yeah, it was the right call.
Next up from Enzeb, who was actually here today. We met you.
Yes.
Enzeb, live
to
in
meet
the flesh.
Enzeb today.
Great to
John,
put a face
great
to the name.
To meet you, John.
I think we touched about this a bit earlier. Stefan, you were saying Barzi was talking about how, you know, they need to do better with Dobson gone. So Enzeb asks, I understand that Dobson is a big piece of the power play, but they can't have a zero and expect to win. What else can they do to help with that unit?
Yeah, I think it's stop being so perimeter and don't force things. If there's a shot to be had, Watt told us early on when he was talking about the power play units that top units there to make plays. Second units there to just get pucks on net. Just get pucks on net. Like I talked about before with Aho's goals last year in the playoffs and just the simplicity of when they had success with just getting shots through. That's all they have to do. It doesn't have to be creative. Sure, there are times where you can be creative and have the bang, bang, bang goal. For sure, but right now, just getting the power play going, you need confidence. Just get shots on goal, soft shots. It doesn't have to be a rock from the point. You don't have Dobson. So the rocket is going to probably be on the second unit with Pulak. You know, Brock Nelson's one-timer is nothing to him. It's just he misses the net a lot on those. So with guys in front, with the way those players in Palmieri, especially with how hot he's been, just get pucks on net. Sharp angle shots. Produce those rebounds. That's the best thing to do right now because overthinking and trying to do too much is not going to bring results. Keeping it simple and getting it that way, that's going to be the best way to get out of this rut.
Yeah. There's nothing I need to add to that.
All right, so then we'll move on. Yeah, Mike.
Excellent, excellent job.
Stefan, that was like short. That had a lot of context, but you kept it sweet and not too long. You didn't over-explain, but we had a clear-cut answer there.
Thanks,
that
Dad.
Was crazy.
Appreciate it.
All right, next up from DTMR. Why no shots from the point on the power play? Pulak bombs needed.
Pulak bombs are not bombs.
Yeah.
They're not.
Pulak bombs don't go where they need to go. That's the problem. They're inaccurate.
So I talked to him.
Sometimes they hit, though, and when they do, it is nice. So
I talked to Pulak a month or two ago. I did a story for it as well of just what happened to the accuracy because he was...
Really?
And it was pretty blunt, and I just said, you know, obviously you've had trouble with the accuracy. Just what's gone into it? And he said, you know what? He has struggled mightily with finding the right stick. He said that.
Yeah, you said
he
that.
Said that every year that they change the flex. He's had a really... He said he's using a much older stick now, much older... what's it called, the flex, things like that, than he's used in the past. Mm-hmm. He just has a hard time, and I guess it's interesting if you're a baseball fan as well with this new pitch clock they have. It takes time to get used to changes, and I think for Pulak, finding the stick's important. Now, I think a lot of it has to do with the mindset. Obviously, he has the talent. He's hit the net before, but he said right now he's happy, and you've noticed it. Even since Wasmuir here, since he's come back from his injury, he's been more accurate. The wrist shots are more accurate. The slap shots are more accurate. So I think he's settling into a groove, and I think on the power play for sure, when he has the bomb to shoot it, whether it's going to go top shelf, short side, or produce a rebound, that's key. But like I said, getting the simple shots on the point, that's what's going to be traffic in front of goals, make life as hard as possible. Because sure, those shots are great, but if you're, you know, I talked to Parise about it last year. I said, when you see Pulak winding up, he goes, I'm getting out of the way, because that's not a shot I'm trying to screen the goalie on. That's me trying to open up for a rebound. So I think Pulak's shot is great when he could use it to do that. But I think the focus has to be the softer shots. It's more accurate when you're doing the softer stuff.
Well, that's it right there. And that's been the talk, is that the slap shot is kind of becoming a thing of old, right?
I mean, unless you have an empty net in your the Ottawa Senators.
Right.
Yes.
Not to say that nobody's taking slap shots anymore, but you're not seeing it as frequently. And to your point, I'd much rather see a defenseman take a more accurate wrist shot that just has a better chance of making its way to the net or even ticking off somebody on the way in. And that's all you kind of need. But I think to the main point, to the question, is that we just need to see more pucks coming from the point in any shape or form. That's the problem, is I think they're just getting too picky. And it might have even been you on the show. There was somebody who pointed out the fact that Dobson rarely takes shots from the point. He's always looking past. And that there was like a breakdown. It might have been on Twitter, wherever it was, but there was a breakdown of how the frequency of Dobson's shots, and obviously he's been on the power play all season, and the number was just so low by comparison to a lot of other guys out there. So it's just a situation where they seem to lean much more heavily on getting the puck down low and trying for shots down there, but throw some in from the point. You got the extra bodies down low. Let the puck drop. Let the puck bounce off of somebody and just clean up the garbage. Put it in the net.
And my point of view just as a goalie is if you see a team setting up for the one-timer, first off, you go into the game with film knowing what the game plan is. But I just think if you see it at the point, you know that those shots aren't going to come, you're already anticipating the pass to either face-off dot for the one-timer. You're getting set. But if there's traffic in front and the puck goes to the point and you're fighting and he shoots it back the other way or just a soft shot, much harder to track. When you know it's coming and it's going to come fast, you're like, okay, He's probably going glove side if it's going to the top of the right, or as a goalie, the left circle. He's probably not going against the grain. Same way vice versa. I can get set, which is why goalies like Varlamov right now, Sorokin when he's on his game, is they get over so fast. The goalies understand, they read it. But point shots, like you said, you're not just fighting to find where the shot's coming from or where it's going, but now you're trying to pick it up through sticks. And then the rebounds, when you can't pick it up and you're picking it up last second, very hard to control the rebound. Whereas if it's a hard shot, blocker to the corner, catching it. Those low wrist shots, unless you catch it in the chest, they're probably going right back out to the slot.
There you go.
All right. Next up from Luigi Mani. I believe it's Mani. I want to say it's Italian.
Fair enough.
It's not Maine. Mani, you know, Luigi Hands is what that would be.
Sure.
There you go. So Luigi Hands, go-to sandwich chips drink combo from Blue Line. For me, it's the Zamboni, add hot sauce and onions with kettle chips, any kind, and a Diet Coke. Blue Line is the best.
Wow. Anybody want to take that one?
Zamboni is my favorite.
Zamboni is your favorite?
The Zamboni is incredible. My dad and I both get it every time. My girlfriend today is getting the back check, I think.
It's up there.
I can't see it.
It's okay.
Just, anyway, she told me I had to get her a sandwich. Because this
wow.
is... The
Don't
sandwich
come
here,
home without a sandwich.
No, these sandwiches here are absolutely incredible.
We know this.
Yeah.
This is true.
Unreal.
I'm a big Jimmy B guy. Roast beef, good stuff. Jimmy B is what I go with.
I would go bacon, egg, and cheese most times. I got one today. But if I had to choose a specialty sandwich,
sure.
The Blue Liner.
Okay.
I'm a sucker for a chicken cutlet and Russian dressing, bacon.
Okay.
I mean, how could you not?
She's getting the butterfly, by the way. The butterfly. Yeah.
Okay.
The butterfly. Okay.
It even sounds nice.
Yeah, it's great.
Okay. All right. Very good. Hey, Donnie, you're hanging out here. You got a favorite sandwich to make here, buddy?
Oh, I like the Hockey Night New York.
He likes the Hockey Night New York.
What a great answer.
Why didn't I think of that?
When was the last time you had one?
With the avocado.
With the avocado. Well, he remembers the ingredients. That's good. That's good. All right.
In honor of Christian.
Have you had one in 2024? All right. That's fine. We'll work on that. We'll talk behind the scenes. Great question.
We'll cut that.
CGS878 wants to know if we're ever going to update the Blue Line commercial. He said it's old.
It's a fair point.
Are we going to do a new one?
We're getting the thumbs up from Donnie.
I think we all need to be in the next one.
We'll see. We'll see.
Come on. I'll do it. You don't even have to pay me for it.
Let's pump your brakes,
I'll
buddy.
Do a free feature.
Well, you know what? There has been some talk behind the scenes. There's been some chatter. We haven't gotten too far along, but yes, we know it is a bit aged. I mean, it's a classic, let's be honest.
It's a happy
great commercial, and Donnie put his heart and soul into it. The acting chops were just off the charts. Can't stand those lightning. But
he really can't though.
But yeah, I think we'll get an update on it pretty soon. I like that. We'll see what happens.
We'll update it when he eats a Hockey Night New York sandwich.
There we go. There we go. We got a long summer to think about that. So maybe
or
we'll
short summer.
Hey, come on. I see what you're saying.
Don't attack me.
I was ready. I was ready.
I meant, you know, if the honor's going to run, it's a shorter summer.
Okay, I like that.
I thought I was going to get punched.
All right, good stuff.
Next up from aisle 72. Am I the only one that thinks that Trocheck took a bit of a dive on Dobson to draw a penalty?
I think
he went in a little easy.
He did. I mean, anybody would do this in his circumstances.
Yeah,
but when he got up, he did look right at the ref. He was like, did you see that? You
know? Again, I think get the right to. I think it's a minimum two-minute penalty. But I think Trocheck did get the last laugh, obviously winning it in the shootout.
That's true.
But yeah, I thought it was a bit of a dive. I think, but you see it called all the time. So,
yeah, I definitely think Dobson deserved a call there.
Yep.
I'm not upset that he didn't get one, but I think he had Trocheck had an argument to be made, and you talk about thinking about somebody who's going to hit someone. Looked like Trocheck was going to hit the ref after that. I mean, he went right at him. He was animated, to say the least.
Good on Dobson, though, by the way, moving on, is you need to see Dobson physical. And in a game like that, to lay that hit there, it's like a goalie where if you don't go after the person in front of your crease, they're going to keep going back there and bullying you.
True.
So I thought even if Dobson got called on that, that's a statement hit right there.
Sure.
Next up from Mr. Trotty 19. He asks, when was the last time the Islanders had a good power play? The Dynasty days or 1993 with Turgeon and Thomas? Do you young whippersnappers remember?
I mean, a consistent... like top of the league power play, I nothing comes to mind for me. I mean, there were spots where they were top 15, top 10 here and there. But like the last time the Islanders had like a consistently reliable power play, it probably goes back to one of those eras that were just mentioned here. You know, it's just been something that they've been struggling with. You know, it was better earlier this year. We thought that it was a problem solved, and I made a comment on Twitter about it too, that since Waugh took over, the power play has taken a dive. Now, is that because Waugh has taken over? Is that a direct result of what he's telling these guys to do out there? it could be. But for whatever reason, whether it's a coincidence or not, the power play has been very, very poor since that time came around when Patrick Watt took over. So I don't know if he went to Johnny Mack and said, do this, do this, do this, and then it's gone south, or if it's a coincidence or what. I mean, because like we've talked about this too, even going into this season where you thought the PK was going to be great and the power play was going to be struggling, right? And then it was the complete opposite. And now we're in a place where the penalty kill has gotten a little bit better, but the power play has now hit the tank. And you just it's just tough to figure out.
Yeah, I definitely wasn't alive when it was a good
unit. No, you weren't. No,
I think teams may have been black and white. I'm really not sure.
I think all of life was black and white back in the day. I think that was just what it was picking up. I don't think we had color until 1960 in the world. I don't think.
Maybe.
The sun was different back then.
Okay.
The sun was different?
Yeah. It's what brings us, you know, our rainbows, our light, our spectrum here, wow. You know?
I need to go home.
Yeah.
Ed is on a tear today.
Ed is happy to be here.
Yeah. We're having a good day.
So what do we got next here? Something next.
We have plenty. We have repeat offenders in the chat.
Repeat offenders?
Yeah.
Do we have any quality questions left?
Yeah, I was going to do another one from Tom Boyle, who's here. He asks, is Hughes going to be ready for camp?
I believe Jack Hughes will be ready for camp. They probably should have shut him down a lot earlier to make it a guarantee. Mm. I think he will be, though, but I'm not a doctor. I have no idea.
Okay.
All right.
What else you got?
We have another one from NZM. Who gets the remaining starts and the bulk of the playoff work? Varley has made a case to be the man.
There's no look ahead to the bulk. It is going to be a game-by-game thing. If Varley plays well against the Devils and the game doesn't matter against Pittsburgh, Sorokin goes in, but I think it's Varlamov's crease until he gives Wah a reason to switch. That being said, if the first game of the playoffs, Varlamov's not great and he struggles, he'll go probably to Sorokin, but there's no way to look ahead and game plan that.
Yeah, I think we have to see what happens tomorrow and Wednesday before a final decision is made. But I think, as you said earlier, if the playoffs started tomorrow and the Islanders are there, I think Varlamov gets game one. I think, you know, you can look at it that way.
Yeah. Another one from Isle 72. Has the coaching staff have any ideas why the PK is so horrible? I tend to think they don't have the type of players to get the job done.
You say that, but then there's times where it looks really, really good, and it's about finding consistency, right? We don't obviously get to talk to the coaches. That's just a rule. You can't talk to them. But they have two defensive coaches now here, with Benoit coming in, with Bois brought in, and Huda being here. So not that to say it's up to the coaches, but they've definitely structurally changed a few things. But it comes down to just bearing down. We've seen so many times where that one clear could have happened. And, for example, Pajot deking trying to get the puck out or making a quick pass. Just if they keep it simple, the PK will be just fine. We're seeing them play a lot better at the 6-on-5 situation against. So I just think it's players making the plays. I think the players are here to be successful. I think last year they started like the first 8 games, their penalty kill was perfect. So I think the players have it in themselves. It's just bearing down.
Ed, if you have one more good one.
We do.
Okay.
Enzeb, this is a hard question for me to ask. Has Sorokin lived up to the hype? He has had moments, but has issues. Would we have been better served staying with Varley and using the money in other places?
Didn't see that one coming.
Well, the money has not kicked in yet. So we can't talk about money yet because the contract kicks in next year, correct? Yes. So has he lived up? Every contract is... When the end of the contract's done, if the Islanders win a cup, that's all that matters, right? A player could be bad for the first 4 years of their deal, but if the fifth year he wins MVP and they win the Stanley Cup, that's fine. I think he has to be better. He definitely can't be the way he's been this year going forward if they're paying him this kind of money to be that number one guy. I do think he'll bounce back. I don't think it was, let's keep Varlamov. Again, Varlamov is a guy that's been a great backup, could be just stutter on 10 teams, but can he play a full 60-something games every year? No, I don't think it was a mistake to sign Sorokin. I think you had to. Maybe the AAV is something that he had to prove more of to get it that high, but this is the day in the NHL where goalies that are that good, when they show to be that good, get that money. Now it's up to Sorokin to be better, but I don't think it was a situation where they could have saved money. The Islanders are built from the goaltending on up. They need a guy like Sorokin here.
I think the answer is yes, he has lived up to the hype. I think everybody's just disappointed with the season that he's had. Mm-hmm. And I have faith that this is a guy who's going to bounce back. I don't think that this year's Ilya Sorokin is going to be the Ilya Sorokin we get for the duration of that contract. I think he just has such a large body of work, and I know some of this goes outside of the NHL, but he's been a great success everywhere he's been. He was obviously amazing last year. He was, you know, a lot of people were picking him to be the Vezina winner this year. And I think this is more a bump in the road than anything else. And what we've learned, we've made references to other goaltenders as well, whether it's Bobrovsky or whomever, where, you know, you're not always going to get an A season out of your top goalie. Even look at Shesterkin. Yeah. I remember Ranger fans crying about Shesterkin not too long ago in recent years, saying that he may not be the guy and he's not living up to the hype. And now look, he's bounced back. He's playing great again. So I don't think we have a lot to worry about with Sorokin. It's unfortunate that he's not having the year that, you know, everybody expected, but he still has time to change that narrative too. We can get into the playoffs and he can be the guy that everybody's waiting for, and maybe a little late, but would be the perfect time for me.
Whoever's in goal needs more help from the team in front of them. That's
fact.
That being, whatever Sorokin did last year, which was unreal, and I mean, that was not human, what he did last year. He's been a little more human this year, but if the Islanders are going to win consistency going forward under Waugh, the defense has to be much better in front of whoever is in between the pipes.
I think that's a great way to end it. So thank you to everybody for tuning in live, for helping us out here in Questions Brewing. Ed, cue that music. So, folks, I want to thank Donald Rosner and Blue Line Deli and Bagels for having us here at this wonderful spot. The food is fantastic. The people are even better. If you haven't been here yet, definitely come on down, check them out, try out the menu. It is absolutely wonderful, and it's a pleasure to be here, and it was a pleasure to help Donnie out raise some money for the Chloe Bell Foundation earlier today. And, of course, a big thanks to Blue Line Deli and Bagels for presenting our show, located here at 719 West Jericho Turnpike in Huntington and 217 Carlton Avenue in East Islip. Check out the menu or order online at bluelinedeli.com. Also, a huge thanks to Main Street Board Game Cafe, located at 307 Main Street in Huntington Village. Find out how to unplug your game at mainstboardgamecafe.com. And also a huge thanks to Razor and Kniff Attorneys at Law. Nobody likes going to court, but if you have to, call 516-742-7600 for a free consultation. Also, a huge thanks to Devils legend Ken Danico for joining us here today, talking about the Devils, talking Isles, talking playoff race. Outstanding stuff from Ken. And of course, a big thanks for you guys for tuning in here at twitch.tv/hockey9ny and your favorite streaming providers. Stefan Rosner, where can everybody find you on the internet and stuff?
Yeah, you can find me at Stefan_Rosner, STEFENROSNER on Twitter, Hockey News, Islanders, Rangers, and NHL.com.
You can follow myself, Shawnee Hockey, on Twitter. You can follow the show at Hockey Night NY on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, and everywhere else. And folks, if you dig what we're doing here at Hockey Night New York, please rate, review, subscribe, like, all that stuff. Tell your friends, tell your acquaintances, and spread the word of Hockey Night in New York. And with that, we will be back next week, hopefully talking New York Islanders playoffs. Big game tomorrow, big game Wednesday. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. So, for Stefan Rosner, for Jake the Snake, for Edzo over here, thanks to T. Boyle for hanging out with us live. And again, thank you to Donald Rosner and the great Blue Line and Deli staff for having us here, host us here. We had a wonderful time. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.